Welcome everyone to this week's weekly market update, June 4th, about 10:30 Central Time with myself and Carl. How are you?
I am doing just well today, Scott. Yourself?
Doing well. I am excited to be back after a week off of the pod. And so let's go ahead and catch up with the numbers from the last podcast. So we've got an S&P that's essentially flat from last Thursday, a Dow that's up about 2%, mostly due to today. And NASDAQ flat, Russell flat, and crude oil, of course, still maintaining that volatility due to conflict in the Middle East. And so, yeah, it's been kind of a quiet five trading day session. And, I'll take that. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And I think so. The NASDAQ was doing really well to start the week, or end the week last week, and a little bit to start the week. But we have gotten some earnings, which is why you're seeing the volatility in the NASDAQ and why it's now come down to be flat. Broadcom, which is one of the highest weighted stocks inside of the NASDAQ, as well as the S&P, which is another reason why the S&P has been a little low. Missed earnings, didn't do as well as everyone thought they were going to. So you can see the correction happening now, just based on that. And as far as the Dow, and this kind of leads into what I wanted to really speak on today when it comes to the market and the portfolios, right before we jump into interest rates and the metrics of that. This really shows the importance of having diversification within your models, just like the way we run the portfolios here. Because when you have the S&P and the NASDAQ, both of them are very heavily weighted into tech, which is exactly what a lot of people who wanted growth want, right? Because tech right now is the one thing that seems to be just wheels up, go. You have the AI trade, you have everything connected to the AI trade, the internet, all the new technology that keeps coming out. So everything has been able to really make that growth mode go, at least over the last 5 to 10 years. But we see earlier this year, right, when we started having a more broad exposure, and you're seeing now when something in tech doesn't work too well or misses earnings or pipeline disruptions or anything like that, it really does drag the market down with it, which is why we have diversification inside the portfolio. Because when that happens, we have aspects in the Dow, we have aspects in the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Russell 2000, right? We're touching everywhere. So if one sector or one industry doesn't do too well, the portfolio is still able to maintain its growth course.
Yeah, and a couple of points on that. Obviously, we keep a close eye on sector rotation. There's a lot of seasonal aspects to that. We talked about four different components that we use to construct a portfolio, but absolutely diversification is key. And I'll give you one great example. You'll like this, Carl. My darling stock, Apple. So for instance, at one point this year, it was down 10%. It is currently made a new all-time high yesterday. It is currently up 15%. So diversification helps to smooth that out. And it does tend to be heavily concentrated in those tech stocks, at least over the last, 20 years or so. So it is very, very key to have that diversification component, but also, it's one thing to be diversified, but it's another thing to identify, like I mentioned, those sector rotations, which is what we lean heavily into and has absolutely benefited our portfolios. I mean, if you look at the our year-to-date returns against the market, it's pretty well. And then you overlay that with what the risk metrics are associated to that. It's really amazing. So lower standard deviation and equal, if not higher, return. And so that's what you want to see, especially in a year like this. Let me touch on one other thing real quick, Carl, and then I want to kick it over to Carl's corner. One other thing is amazing to me as we started talking about these stats in, I believe it was June of last year, so 12 months ago. And it was a huge range, but it was like six different stats, and it ranged from 15%, predicting for 2026, 15% all the way up to 32%. What's amazing to me is the S&P right now, so it made an all-time high on Monday, but Well, let's just use that number. As of Monday, the all-time high, it was up 10.8%. As of right now, it's up 9.8%, not even halfway through the year. It shows the importance of those four components that we always talk about, statistics being one of them. And typically, two of the four are leaders in any given year. Statistics, obviously, statistics and macro, really this year, but and last year. But the statistics proved themselves, and these were historical statistics going back a long, long time. So, anyways, speaking of macro, let's jump into Carl's corner.
And just a quick breakdown on macro. When we talk about macro, we mean macroeconomics. So the main thing, like interest rates, inflations, these are the metrics that no matter what the seasonal statistics will say, they govern the rest of those. So
That's
if the
right.
macros don't work, the seasonals probably don't work, and the statisticals don't work, which is why we always start with the macros, which is why we're so heavily discussing interest rates in every single podcast, as well as looking at the inflation rates in every single podcast, because
That's
those are
right.
the two most important metrics we have when it comes to portfolio management. And so we have June 17th, Warsh's first Fed meeting that he is going to be running. And we are still looking at no rate cut, no change, no hike, no anything like that. And that's more than likely what we're going to see, as Scott usually says. When you're within 20 days, that's exactly what you're probably going to end up getting. 97% chance of no rate cut. So let's go ahead and kick that off and assume that's going to happen. Now, if we look in later in the year, which is what we've kind of been doing, I'll look at the first one, then look later. Later in the year, the probabilities are still about no rate cut. And this all comes down to the inflation and how they piggyback off of one another, because you cannot have a lower interest rate underneath inflation. If inflation's at four and interest rate's lower than four, that's normally not very good, and it takes longer for that inflation to kick down. And so with inflation rates kind of still being up in the air due to the entire oil conflict that's been happening overseas, until we start getting steady under, I would say under 3.3, at least under 3% inflationary numbers for these next few months, we're not going to see these probabilities change. But that is exactly what we want. We need to have the data show that there's not going to be a risk of too much inflation before we just start going and making cuts. And I think that's exactly what Kevin Warsh is going to pride himself on. He said that he's a very data-dependent governor, and that's what he's going to be bringing to the chair table.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think honestly, there's a differing opinion, I guess, on Warsh. One thing I'll say about him is he, at the age I think of like 30, was a Fed governor during 2008. So he's seen the worst of it.
That he has seen the worst of it for
yeah.
the American economy.
So that's good. He got some experience behind him. But I do think that too, there's obviously sides to this, but I do think he is pro low interest rate when the data supports it. And I'm okay with that
Absolutely.
purely because it supports and it boosts equity prices and treasury prices and commodity prices in a lot of sense, not the inflationary commodity. So I think he's going to do a good job, hopefully be independent and in the future, when the data supports it, lower interest rate. So I think it'll be good.
I do too. And the data is right now still looking pretty positive. The PCE last month was really good. Now we have unemployment rate tomorrow. It's going to be a big tell on the strength of the economy. We've had the JOLTS opening, the JOLTS report. And I want to see if I can find this and give you the exact number. So JOLTS job openings, that's another really big metric. And maybe one day we'll kind of dive into why that's so important. But that is job openings. There's over 600,000 more job openings than anticipated. 600,000. That's a lot when you're expecting only about 6.5 million, and there's over 7.5 million job openings, which is absolutely fantastic. That's exactly what you want to see. That normally leads to a healthy economy, and the healthy economy leads to good interest rates, leads to lower inflation, the whole thing, and everything kind of ties into one another. And so we're getting good reports. The key ones are going to be the CPI, PPI, and PCE, and unemployment rate. Those are the four we have our heaviest eyes on to make sure that we're not going to have to shift anything. And if it does happen and these come back and they're not very good, we are ready to make those pivots and shifts inside of the portfolio if necessary.
Well, that's a good point, and we can wrap it up from there. But I do think you just made a very important point. We have several different constructs of each portfolio for any given instance. And the good thing about markets being so forward-looking, and actually, a lot of this economic data to a degree is a bit forward-looking. So it allows us to be prepared for multiple scenarios. So, yeah, absolutely great point, Carl. And one last topic, Carl, is SpaceX. So I know you've done a lot of deep dive into that. We've gotten a lot of inquiries about that. The IPO is next Friday, the 12th, and I believe you were able to calculate the price per share.
So it's looking like the IPO price is going to be about $135. Now that can obviously change. They can make any decisions they want to make between now and IPO day. But the original looking price is going to be $135 a share. They're going to be floating out there about a half a billion shares, which is about normal, at a $75 billion valuation. Now that's a lot of information. The important thing is, due to the valuations, a lot of people were worried about, will the SpaceX IPO kind of rock the economy one way or another? Because they're anticipating being a $1 trillion company off the start, therefore messing with indexes. It looks like they've taken that into account and they're starting with a lower valuation and they're going to let just the market kind of dictate the pricing of it. But starting at 135, obviously, we'll keep our eyes on it. And the important thing for everyone to note out there, on IPO days, it is the most volatile day that a stock will ever have. You were looking at people who would be able to buy it at 135 and people who are going to be buying it at 190, and it's going to be, there's going to be a giant shift inside of the same day. Just be
Yeah.
aware of that on IPO day. There's going to be a lot of volatility.
And without getting into great detail, but just surface level, how that works is there's already outstanding shares, right? Private equity.
That's right.
And they will benefit from the surge higher, and they will start to sell. That's how this works. They will sell to individuals on the open market. And so my prediction is, and this is kind of a bold prediction, so please don't hold me to it. My prediction is we could see something to the tune of, I don't know in what order, but 30% higher and 30% lower within 30 days. That's my prediction. And I don't know if it starts lower. I mean, obviously, I think it's going to start higher and then lower, but yes, an IPO is one of those things where you really want to let that volatility smooth out, which is why we're not going to incorporate it into our portfolios for a while, because we want the market to price it. We don't want institutions or speculation. That's never a good component in a portfolio. Now, it's great if you want to, one off, let's see what it does. But when it comes to constructing long-term portfolios, it's not be something that we're going to incorporate, but it is going to be interesting to watch and probably continue to talk about over the next couple of weeks, I would imagine.
That's right. That's right. We got our eyes on it. Let's see what happens.
That's right. Okay, well, that's all I had for today, Carl. Do you have anything else?
No, we covered everything I wanted to cover, especially the importance of diversification inside the portfolios and kind of pulled back the curtain into how we've been looking at the market, especially as of late. But if any of the listeners out there think that someone might enjoy a market commentary, feel free to forward us on over to them. We're also on the iHeartRadio app and the Podbean radio app.
Perfect. Actually, we need to in one of these newsletters, we should put I wrote an article called Importance of Diversification for Forbes. So we can pop that in one of these newsletters and it'll kind of expound on that. But with that, then we're going to go ahead and look forward to Friday and the weekend. And we are going to also look forward to doing this again next week.